Alcoholic. Thank you guys. Thanks, Dale. Wherever he's at. Thank you for asking me through Lynn. Got a little lost on the way here, so I just figured out my car's GPS system and it's not accurate. Anyway, Crystal Alcoholic, my sobriety date is August 1st, 2017. My home group is the Common Solution Group in Charlottesville. We meet at 7:30. On Thursdays, we have a tradition meeting the first Thursday of the month and a speaker meeting the last Thursday. I know probably a lot of y'all have been out there, but come see us if you haven't. I can solely thank Alcoholics Anonymous for being here today, still being alive, being sober. I tried a lot of things to get sober for a long time, and nothing worked until I found AA, and then until I started doing AA. I was the type of person, drinker, whatever, that people like me did not get sober. Like, people like me died from this. I had known I was an alcoholic for a long time, and had kind of just accepted the fact that I was gonna die from this. I did not think anything could save me, but I was still relying on human power, right? Doctors, I tried therapy once, but I went drunk. Boyfriends, relationships, other outside issues. I went through a whole, I remember there was one little spell where I was trying to get sober. So I was like, I just have an addictive personality. I need to like get addicted to something else. So I tried to be one of those people that got addicted to exercise that lasted about 3 seconds when you're going to like a spin class, like it's taking shots before you get out of the car. Like just nothing worked and I could not figure it out. I had to be beaten down so bad to finally give this an honest try. I had to hit a bottom which felt like every other night I was hitting a new bottom. My standards couldn't lower fast enough. I had become completely isolated from the world, had no friends, no one called me, no one was ever checking on me, no one invited me to anything. I hadn't gone out to bars in a long time before stopping drinking. Like it had not been fun for a long time. Today, I have a great life today. I have a 2.5-year-old, I'm 6 months pregnant. And those are, I'm married. I should say that first. I'm married to a member of the program, Merv. No matter what we have going on, we always still try to keep AA at the forefront, try to still keep it like the focal point of our life. Our life still revolves around AA as much as it can, when you have like a 2-year-old. But meetings, our home group, working with other people, like we make that a priority because without it, I wouldn't have any of that stuff. My little 2-year-old, a really pretty little boy, and he like reminds me every day, like even before I left, his favorite thing is just to like look at me and go, "More, more." And I'm like, that's me. Like, it's like one is never enough. He'll do this thing where he holds up one finger and then slowly adds another one, like two, And I'm like, that's it. Like, I always wanted more. One was never enough. I've never quite understood when I hear alcoholics speaking and they talk about how they couldn't just have one because then they'd want more. Like, they went to a party and, you could only have one free drink or one drink. I was like, no, I have to get that. Like, I've never understood that to this day. Like, how they'd rather not drink than only have one. Like, not me. Like, I would still have that one. I'd stretch it out, more in my purse. I grew up in Amherst. I always say an hour south of here, but it's like, I guess, 2 hours south of here.
That's
Yeah,
fine.
okay. Middle of nowhere. We had like 60 acres on a farm. My dad was a mobile veterinarian, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was a World War II vet and veteran, and we weren't it wasn't a fancy veterinary gig. He was the he would trade rabies shots for goat's milk, and work just enough to where we never went hungry or anything, but we definitely didn't have more than other families. It was a good upbringing, but very isolated. We were homeschooled on and off a lot. I have a older brother, 15 months older, that also just recently got sober like 2 years ago. So that's been really cool. And so anyway, grew up over there. I always knew as a kid I was weird. I like hung out with the chickens were my thing, and like I stayed outside with the animals like way more probably than I should have. Just that's I didn't understand people. I was terrified of people. Really shy kid, just kind of weird. And when I discovered outside issues when I was like 15, 16, that kind of changed everything. I started getting into like, hanging out and driving around doing that stuff. And I wouldn't say I started getting in trouble, but I was definitely like smoking stuff before school every day, and like, kind of got addicted to feeling impaired all the time. I definitely like we would plan nights and stuff around that to try to, who had it, where to get it. It was just easier to get than alcohol. And a lot of friends grew it, So anyway, I think my senior year, my parents got divorced, and my mom took me off to Roanoke, and it was a really ugly divorce. I got real angsty. Started going to like punk shows in downtown Roanoke. Had like the big mohawk and stuff all in my face, and I didn't realize, till later on, like probably till after I got sober, of like it was a defense mechanism to like keep people at a distance from me. Like no one's like coming up starting conversations with me. And I can't I like got really attracted to just like I don't slummy lifestyles. I don't know, like I don't know. I just got really attracted to like anarchy and that kind of crap. Like it seems very silly now, but anyway, so parents got divorced, and like all through that though, I still like managed to, I guess my senior year I made myself finish. Like they had like a cosmetology school at the high school for that last year, and I look back, and as much as I was like I wasn't getting in trouble, but I was, doing the bare minimum to kind of still get by. And I put a lot of effort into like graduating this like 2 year program in 1 year, so I at least had some sort of something, like a license or something, because I knew I was going to be on my own the minute I turned 18. So somehow I had the wherewithal to like graduate high school still and get this cosmetology license. And then that was it. I turned 18 in the middle of that school year, and moved in with my boyfriend at the time, an hour away, and was driving back and forth to go to school. Yeah, just scraping by on nothing. Every weekend parties at my house. We had like the punk house of Lynchburg or whatever you want to call it. And you know, there was people doing other stuff around me all the time, but when I started drinking, and that's always what I preferred, you know, but I wouldn't say I was drinking alcoholically yet. You know, I didn't drink in the morning. I wasn't drinking every day. Just drinking on the weekends. I was also like 18 and couldn't buy booze yet. Still managed to like maintain a job and, you know, pay my own cell phone bill and insurance and stuff like that. And when I was doing that for about like a year or two on my own, and then I decided to try to get into like art school in Richmond. So somehow I got into VCU and for art school and went down there, moved there and worked really hard, like worked really hard at it, did really well, still not really drinking. Turned 21 down there. You know, we'd go out with the older girls at work, but that was about it. And when I dropped out after like 2.5 years, just because it got too hard, like trying to put myself through school, and you know, my parents were kind of out of the picture. So I moved back to Lynchburg and broke up with that long-term boyfriend. And then my dad died, and I was 22, I think. And I don't, you know, like now I, you know, back then I'd be like, my dad died, you know, I have a reason to drink, you know, my mom doesn't love me, like I have a reason to drink, like whatever it was. And I remember, the first time it like clicked for me. I was, you know, had a bunch of people over, whatever, drinking. My drink of choice was gin, just like shots of gin. And like in the morning, I realized, like on the way to work, if I had a shot of gin, chased it with kefir yogurt, the hangover would stop. And that is so nasty to think about now, is Gordon's gin. But I was like, whoa. I was like, because I would see my friends like ordering beers the next morning after going out and stuff like that with like tomato juice. Never really gotten to that. I was like, that's gross, but a shot, like that's like a quick, it's done, you know. And so I started doing that by myself, and that's when I feel like, you know, I crossed that invisible line, was, you know, starting to drink every night after work, because I was just living alone with my dog, and like then started taking shots in the morning. And that is when it started to go downhill. Very clearly now. It was still fun for a couple years, you know. Still fun for a couple years, you know, but you know, our, you know, expectations, standards, whatever, start lowering, bad relationship after bad relationship. You know, basically got to the point where, you know, you know, the last boyfriend I had was living out of a trash bag, and I was like, great, like he's perfect, like this one's great, like I can give him a place to live, won't leave, you know. I always thought I was helping them out, you know. And that guy got that last guy got to see my bottoms every, you know, constantly. But you know, I was thinking on the way here, like, you know, before I left, Merv was like, gonna do some all-time hits, like some good stories or whatever. And like the only one, there's two, well, I have two that like I feel like kind of describe, like, you know, almost coming into AA, but like realizing in my innermost self like how bad it had gotten. I remember one time we lived way out in Whitehall in the middle of nowhere. And for some reason, we only had one car at the time. Like, car was in the shop, or I'd probably wrecked one of them. I don't know. But It's Charlottesville, and there's a vineyard every 5 miles. And so we lived in Whitehall, and there was a vineyard like a half mile through the woods from where we were living. And I was kind of stranded at home, starting to kind of freak out. He had left. There's no booze in the house. I was getting scared. And I try to like put myself together a little bit, just shaking out, stumble through the woods, pop out in the vineyard at this vineyard, like this fancy vineyard. People are drinking and stuff. Me, I'm coming through the woods, go into the like fancy little like vineyard house, buy two bottle of wines, and just walk right back through the woods, just like totally normal, like nothing's going on. And got so drunk that night, and he's just like, "How did you get drunk?" And I'm like, "I don't know, bro. Like, where did I get it from?" Like, so it's like stuff like that where it's like I would go, and I think it, I think about that line in the book where it's like we would go to any length. I was like, in the middle of winter, any length, walking a mile and a half mile through the woods, looking like an absolute psycho person. Yeah, that's any links for alcohol, so that's kind of the stuff I think about. And another low point was when I this was an ongoing thing, like every couple weeks I'm like, all right, it's a snow day, or it's a long weekend, or the derecho, when we had the derecho here forever ago, power got knocked out for a week. I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna go get a hotel room at Virginia Beach. I'm gonna get sober there. Drive all the way to Virginia Beach, lock myself in a hotel room. Next morning, I'm up bright and early. This is before I had like GPS and stuff. And I'm like looking for a liquor store. Day one, hour one, and start driving around, and I see a liquor store with all these little flags out front and stuff. And I'm like, there it is. There's one. It's like, ah, pull in, sit there, wait for the guy to come up and like. It's like I forget what time they open. Like it was either 9 or 10. And comes up, and unclicks the door. I like wait a couple seconds so I don't seem too ain't too antsy. And then I get out and go in, and he's like, "Where we just opened? This is a brand new liquor store, and you're a first customer ever." And I was just like, "My God!" Like this is another example of just like that's crazy. Like that is just like. Just a smack in the face of just like how ridiculous it was. Just terrible. And so anyway, oh, keep track of what time it was. Okay. So, the like I don't have like a I don't want to do a whole drunk log, like I guess you get the picture. Like it's just around the clock drinking for a long time, like didn't draw a sober breath for a long time. And my last like year of drinking, again with the human willpower, like no human willpower, the boyfriend had BAC pocket keychain monitors all through the house, like kept testing me constantly, DUI, multiple hospital visits where I'm, I think I'm having a panic attack, ending up in the hospital. And I remember like being in the hospital one time and like looking at this girl, that this nurse chick that was like about my age, and she just had this look on her face like I had already died. And I'm looking yellow, my eyes are yellow, and like I'm looking at her like, dude, like do something, like help me, like how, what are you supposed, like what do y'all do in this situation, like give it, and they don't have answers, and that's like the whole, it was just working with a sponsee the other night. We just finished the vision for you, and at the end we were talking about, just going to church and, like why that doesn't work for some people, and like why it's like, the combo of like, having a higher power and like faith with works, like we're, one alcoholic talking to another. And that's like the perfect example, right? Like they don't know what to do with us. They have no answers, And if I'm taking you through the steps, I expect you to take someone through the steps, because it's just a waste of working with you if you're not going to do it. Like you're going to drink again, like no matter what. Like if you're not going to go to meetings, you're not going to share, and you're not going to work with another alcoholic, it's only a matter of time. Some say, like, I feel like, I forget who says it, but like, you get so spiritual, you float away or whatever. And I've got to witness that, like in my own home group, like people leaving the home group being like, I have God, I got it, I found God, like I don't need AA anymore. And I've always been, I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. Like that's great for you. Like that would not work for me. Like I can't be surrounded about with by this all the time. And because I'm terrified of drinking again. Like I know there's no reason why I should be standing here today. There's no reason why I should be alive, except for AA. Like I didn't have a white light experience, but the morning I got myself up and committed to stop drinking, I got up, was drinking. I was like laying in bed for a week, just total blackout, resigning to, like, I'd been in and out at AA for like 8 months, like trying this thing. I had a sponsor. I had already done a fifth step. I was drunk doing my fifth step. Do not recommend that. But I kept waiting for you to fix me, not for, it to happen with me, right? I kept still waiting for the rooms to fix me or my sponsor to fix me. That's not how it works, And so anyway, I got up, and I was just laying in bed for a week, and had my revolver next to my head, and I don't know how I made it. Like I have no idea how I made it, but something, like, it was like I had, think about like the Red Bull commercial, like wings. I just floated out of bed and like drove myself to the hospital, checked myself in, and I needed a supervised detox. And it clicked, while I was there. They put me up in the psych ward, and I had a lot of small random, like Lynn calls them, like God shots. Small little moments happening in there. Like the guy nurse working with me was, I cut his hair, and then and then another guy in there, which I still have not seen him to this day in a meeting. His name was Charlie, and he was telling me how he started one of the home groups in Charlottesville, and I've yet to see that guy again. But he was, he helped me like get out of there early because I was gonna go to meetings, whatever it was. I was there for like 2 days. It was like all these little things while I was in there. It was like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like I thought I was crazy. I thought I had melted my brain to the point where I could not recover, right? Seeing stuff, like my physically, like I thought I was done. Like I was like okay with that. I was like, this is how bad it had to get, right? I had to be practically dead before I, like, became willing, right? And I had enough AA in my system to kind of know that it would work. And that, y'all did drink as bad as me, and I could still get sober and happy. I got out of there. Me and my sponsor got back together. She didn't fire me. Went back through the steps, and I mean, she got me through them quick. Like we went through them very quick. And got me right to amends, like pretty quick. And that was like the pivot, I feel like, in my sobriety. That's at the point where it changed for me. Like I didn't feel anything after, one. I had one down, two and three, yeah, whatever, no problem. Like I will do anything you want me to. God is not an issue. I really don't care at this point. Four and five, it just helped me realize that, like, all these excuses I had, for why I thought I'd drink were total BS. And they were all just excuses. Like none of it was real. And I heard a speaker recently, It was real, but like, not as bad as I thought it was. I heard a speaker recently to like really kind of like break down fear. I can't remember who it was, but I'm like 7 years in and like just now think I got it. Like just now I think I realized like the fear thing, I mean I understood the concept of it, but it wasn't till now I feel like that really sank in. I love AA because I feel like everything, like the meaning of stuff is like always evolving for me. And that term fear, and I'm sure a lot of y'all with Billy and Lynn, like y'all know this already, but for me it was like a light bulb went off, like, oh, literally all of it hasn't happened yet. Like none of it has happened yet. It is all made up in my head. It is all me not relying on a higher power. It's all me like trying to take the reins again and think I have control of anything. And that's like a huge mo that was a huge moment for me, like realizing that like all this stuff I'm trying to control, and I'm scared of the future and scared of this happening, scared of that happening. Like it just means I'm not having enough like faith in my higher power that that everything's gonna work out the way it should. And it's always in the moment when things are really bad that I'm like able to stop and let it go and be like, okay, like I'm done. Like I'm gonna turn it over now. Like I have no control over this. Things always turn out better than how I would have arranged it in the first place. So I don't know why I still try to like, do this in my head constantly to myself. But I guess that's just, what it is. But yeah, so six and seven, like the character and defects and shortcomings. I know a lot of people don't agree with this, but I love looking at the defects. And like I think Bill basically said it was like they're the same thing. Shortcomings and defects are the same thing. But for me in my little brain, like I like to break it down as like the defects are, the things I keep doing, and the shortcomings are the things that I won't do that I ha like I always don't do, like say thank you or like send that Christmas card or like call that person. Like I like to think of it like that because it makes my it makes it make a little more sense in my brain that way. But when I went out and made my first amends is also like I said, like I kind of had a I woke up at the wheel or whatever y'all want to say. Like I kind of like felt like a part of the world, not just like I felt like the fifth step, I felt like a part of AA, but with the ninth step I felt part of society again. I went back to my small town and like had a couple really fun, or not fun, but like, interesting amen things happen there. I was a little bit of a klepto when I was a teenager. And I went back at my first job when I was 16, was working at a antique store, and I didn't steal money, but I would steal like the little keychain things you would get with, like back in the 50s and 60s, you'd get like a little keychain that matched your license plate, and you'd have it on your key ring, which is genius. I don't know why we still don't do that, but I thought those were the coolest things. So I stole a whole bunch of those and like a few other things, and I still had all that. And so when I went back and made my amends, it was like called Lou's Antiques, and Lou was a woman, and she was a pill dude, and she had died. And so I went to make amends. I didn't know that. And I go up to the woman at the counter and I'm like, I'm in a program of recovery, and I'm trying to go back and make amends for some of the things I did and I stole from here when I worked here when I was 16, and here are the things I stole. And she was like, oh, she was like, and I was like, here are the things I stole and here's some money. And she was like, oh, well, you paid for them. Why don't you just go ahead? Why don't you just keep them? And I was like, no. I was like, here they are. Like, you take them. I don't know what to do in that situation. And she was blown away. And she said, my nephew is in AA. When is he going to get to this step? She was so excited. And so like I had a couple little things like that happen while making amends that just like gave me the motivation to like keep going and start doing some of the hard ones. Meanwhile, I guess I think we get all get sober when we're supposed to get sober at the at the time we're supposed to get sober. And for me, it kind of lined up perfect. That later that year, my grandmother died, and then following spring, my grandfather died, and I was be able to be there for my family, like be there to help out with stuff, which I was not someone that would help with anything before. I was I actually my grandmother wasn't, I mean, she was always sick, but it was like, self-induced a little bit. But she had really bad diabetes and heart problems and everything, and she was going in for a stent, like a heart stent. And I was just like, something made me, I was like, I'm just gonna go see her in the hospital. Like, she lives in Richmond. No, I would not have done that. Like, I would not have gotten in the car and driven to Richmond to see my grandmother before she went to surgery. I've just been like, ah, she'll be fine, and I went, and she didn't even make it into surgery. They had taken her off blood thinners, and she like they resuscitated her once and then asked what we wanted to do, and or maybe they resuscitated her twice. And at that point, it's like it's never good after that. So, but anyway, I got to see her in her total normal state, like happy as could be, before she passed away, like completely by surprise. But anyway, and then my mom was one of us. She definitely like, struggled. She never drank while I was growing up. My dad didn't either. They neither one of them touched anything the whole time I was growing up. We're super religious. My dad would make wine, but he would make the most disgusting wine. And it was in like a 5 gallon bucket in the basement, and he would have like, no joke, like that much once a week on Sunday, I tried to drink it, and it was gnarly. Anyway, they just both never drank. Like, I never saw alcoholism. I didn't know what it was. I remember when I was in the liquor store one time buying booze, and there was a woman in front of me checking out, and she was shaking buying the booze, and the person behind the counter was like, "If I ever get like that, just shoot me." And like, I'm there standing there with wine or with whatever I was buying, and like I was like, oh, like I didn't know that that's what that was. Like, I thought that was like nerves or low blood sugar or something like that. I didn't know that's a physical addiction to drinking. So I hadn't seen it. My uncle was an alcoholic, but he lived like 100 miles away. We never saw him much. He showed his butt a couple times, but like, it was like the holidays. Like, I just wasn't exposed to alcoholism. So anyway, my mom, like, after the divorce with my dad, she kind of like spiraled really fast. Like, when it says in the book, like, it affects women like harder and faster, however it puts it, like that is so true. It was for me, and definitely for my mom. And she tried AA multiple times, and she just could not, follow direction, I guess. She just couldn't do it. And I remember one time she was like, "I'm not going back to AA. My sponsor was mean to me." And I was like, it was before I went into AA, and I was like, "Oh, okay, like, yeah, that sucks." Now I'm like, "Yeah, I hope she was mean to you." Like, I hope she was really mean to you. Like, you need someone mean to you so you'll listen. But anyway, she didn't make it in about, let's see, it was 2022, 2021, July 2021. She was drinking and doing other stuff, and just I won't get into the details, but it took her out. It was a huge surprise. And I got to see, like, myself, right? Like, I got to see, like, exactly where I would be at her age, like, if I even made it that far. But yeah, and then about, I guess, like 3 months later, my brother came into the rooms because he got a good view of it too, right? Like, what happens when we don't see a way out, anyway, got through the steps, working with other alcoholics. What time is it? I think we go back. My first sponsor, she was everything I needed when I was trying to get sober. I needed someone that was honest with me and kind of scared the crap out of me a little bit. She was super loud and enthusiastic about AA. And she drugged me around to, like, all these meetings, made me meet so many people. We would go to meetings in Richmond. I think we came here a couple times. Just all over the place. Like, really got me involved in AA and, like, kind of, like, painted a picture for what being active in AA looked like, right? And she ended up moving away. She's, like, in New Orleans now. But when I needed to find a new sponsor, it's because me and my last sponsor started to work together. Like, actually, she started working with me and like got a job. And I, like, got too close. I started realizing that I was, like, keeping stuff from her that I shouldn't be keeping from her. And that kind of scared me, right? Like, she was very like quick to have an opinion about stuff, and that, like, freaked me out. Like, I would, if I told her about something and she poo-pooed it, I would be like, like, really quick. So I started noticing I was keeping things from her, and we started working together. So I was like, it's time to find a new sponsor. And she saved my life. But I think the right thing to do at that time was, like, I need someone that's not this close. Like, I don't see her 9 to 5 every single day, and starting to hide stuff from her. So I've had my new sponsor now, I would say, for about 5 years, I guess. And I love her to death. She's the complete opposite of me in a different way, as in just, like, the spiritual giant that we all want to be. Like, she, my character defects is, like, I'm also, like, quick to judge you and quick to make assumptions, and the love and tolerance thing. Like, I have to remind myself of that all the time. And with her, it's just first nature, like, she just has this way of love and tolerance for people that I've never seen in another person. And, like, I don't think I'll ever get there. Like, I don't think I'll ever be like that. But it definitely, like, puts me in, when I meet up with her and I want to go on one of my rants or something, like, it makes me, it I don't even have to start talking, because I'm like, I already know it when I start talking. She's just like, what? Like, what do you mean? Yeah. So I think I have the perfect sponsor for me for right now. And my biggest things that I need to work on are her biggest strong suits, I feel like. And she helps me so much with all that stuff. And she's always there. I don't think I could have thought of anyone to call the morning I found out, like, my mom died and my sponsor was down the road walking her dogs, and she was at my house in, like, 10 minutes to, like, be there with me. And like, I can't say that. Like, when I was drinking, like, you had like your drinking buddies and your best friends and all that kind of stuff. But like, to just come to someone's house and sit with them and cry with them, you know, like, there's like nothing in, there's nothing compatible with that, except for maybe like a sibling or a parent, you know, that's gonna do that for you. You know, that relationship with my sponsor I have today is just, you know, amazing. Like, I can't like, whatever, I can't say enough about it. But anyway, I guess, like, what time should I end? Six, five off. Okay, try to make it.
Quick whenever you're ready.
Okay. Okay. You know, I guess, you know, today, like, what AA mainly looks like now, you know, it's like, I have a busy life, but I try to keep AA at the forefront. And it's hard. And I see, you know, like, I know plenty of people that have a lot of time and like go back out. And now it's almost like, before I had nothing to lose, and now I feel like I have so much to lose that the thought of drinking terrifies me. And so, like, the whole, like, you know, now I guess sponsorship is where I can kind of like show up the most. Like, I do a lot of service in our home group, like, try to anyway. But like, working with other women and like helping them, like showing them how I got sober and like what it can look like, has been a great gift. I'm really close to a couple of them. And it's always interesting how, you know, where, like, where people, you know, I feel like you work with a bunch of people and like one will make it or whatever. And it's always interesting to me, like, where people slow down. You know, I've always thought like people don't want to do the fourth and fifth step. But for me, the women that I've worked with, everybody gets through that, and then they start their amends and they never even make the first one and just kind of fade away. And I don't know what that is, but like, that whole term, like, don't stop till the miracle happens. Like, to me, that's at making amends is where it really starts to click, you know, that at least that's where it was for me. And so anyway, I'm working with this new girl, and like, I was really scared she was going to be one of those people, like, you know, she's kind of dragging her feet on her first amends for a couple months now, and she just made her first one 2 nights ago, and she's on fire now. And it's like, she's like, I'm like, oh, whew. Like, thank God, I'm not gonna lose you. Like, you're doing it. And she sees it and she's pumped. She's like, starting to bring people to meetings, and like, you know, she's still in college. She's like rounding them up at her school and stuff. And it's so cool. Like, I feel so old, but like, it's so cool to like see someone getting sober that young. I'm like, I can't imagine getting sober at like 24, you know? Like, that would be amazing. Like, I mean, I was not crazy oldie. I was like 31, but you know, my 20s are gone. So it's like amazing that, like, to get to see that and witness that and help those people. I guess I'm not gonna make it. I guess the thing I heard recently that has kind of been like huge for me is, I had a client, and she is an engineer, and she works at this place where they make prototypes for stuff all the time. And her company's motto, and they'll like blow rooms up and stuff. Like, it's like a pretty crazy job that she has, like the stuff they do. Their motto at work is fail faster. And you know, she's not in the program, and like, I was, you know, talking to her, and she said that, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's it, you know? Like, if I could have anything, I would want to fail faster. Like, I feel like in sobriety, I have to be beaten just like I was when I was drinking, like these character defects or whatever it is. I just keep going, doing over and over and over again, and can't learn my lesson. I'd have to be in so much pain before I change. And that, like, simple phrase, like, sound like rounded it up for me. Like, I just want to fail faster at this stuff. I want to get to the other side, whatever it looks like. We'll never get there, I know, but it's like that phrase, like fail faster. That's a perfect sobriety term to me. Like, just I want to make my mistakes and learn from them instead of keep repeating them over and over again. But yeah, I guess that's all I have. I can't really think of anything. Thank you, guys.